And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Have you ever been under the weather and someone has told you, yeah, that seems to be going around? Well, apparently this year it's going around. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the percentage of aching, feverish people who went to the doctor with influenza-like illness has this year reached the national baseline of about 2.2%, the earliest that's happened in the regular flu season in nearly a decade. And so we now welcome Professor Thad Wilson, a senior associate dean at the UMKC School of Nursing, to talk about the influenza rush this season and the nature of vaccinations and clear up some of the misconceptions around them. Kansas City, have you gotten your flu shot yet this season? And are you the type that doesn't like to get flu shots? And why or why not? Tell us why. We'd like to hear your thoughts on flu season and vaccinations here on Central Standard today. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Dr. Wilson, what's unique about this particular flu season in 2012?
It's the early start. Other than the 2008-2009 season, when we had a lot of people come down with flu symptoms early in the year, such as the October-November time period, usually the season hits in the February-March time. This year, we are reaching baseline much earlier. We're about 2,000% above where we were last year.
Wow, 2,000%.
Yes, for certain age groups, yes.
So back up and explain what that means, baseline. It's public health sort of data positioning.
What the CDC does is they have each state report how many people in what they call sentinel areas. Those are hospitals or particular clinics send in information about how many people they've seen, how many people they've tested, and they come up with a baseline for or they come up with a number for this week of the flu season, which officially begins in October of each year. And then they average that over the last 5 years, and that's the baseline is the average for the last 5 years.
So why do healthcare and public health professionals recommend flu shots? Seems like a basic question, but why do they do that?
Well, we like to see people healthy, and we like to see people live. Each year, the United States has about 36,000 people who die from pneumonia or influenza side effects, and there isn't really a reason we think that people should die if we have an effective vaccine, and the vaccine's pretty effective, not 100%. And we find that the elderly and the young are the two that are most at risk, and so we want to get everybody that happens to be around elderly or young people vaccinated so they don't give it to them.
When did this vaccine first start in earnest? When did the flu shot sort of become a pervasive public health method?
We've had about a 20-year history of recommending it for the elderly because those are the ones who are most at risk of dying, and we keep bringing the age at which you should be vaccinated down. We now have a vaccine that can actually be sprayed in the nose for certain age groups so that you're not having to get a shot. And we like to, as I say, get everybody to have the flu vaccine so that those who are most at risk of bad side effects of, like, dying from the influenza, that they're not exposed.
But the particular age group that needs it the most is still elderly.
Elderly and the very young.
And the very young.
Right. Right. So you can now vaccinate children from 6 months of age on up. And in the past, what we wanted was the parents to get vaccinated so they didn't give it to the children. We now can vaccinate the children as well.
I'm not seeing how it works for the immune system. Can you tell me how the flu shot actually works with the immune system?
The body's an amazing, amazing machine. When it has an invasion, either by a virus or a bacteria, it has a wonderful army that it sets up and fights off. And as long as the army inside the body can prepare itself to fight off quick enough, you can overcome all kinds of colds and flus and all kinds of invasions by bacteria. So what they do with a vaccine, they give you a tiny little bit of this flu, and your body recognizes it as a foreign invader and sets up a defense, and it's sets up a big enough defense that when the real flu comes along, it's already ready to go and it can tackle and beat the flu.
So it gives you the flu as practice?
Well, I hate to say gives you the flu. It introduces your body to the virus so that, yeah, it's ready to go.
And so what are the common side effects of that?
Of the vaccine or the
flu? Of the vaccine.
The vaccine, most people, well, not most people, I hear people say, I got the flu vaccine and got the flu. And frankly, that doesn't, that can't happen because the stuff we're putting in your body is dead. It's not a live virus. It's a part of a virus, a portion of the protein of the virus. So you cannot get the flu from the vaccine. However, you can have soreness and redness at the site that you're vaccinated. And the flu vaccine each year carries three strains of flu, and there are thousands. So you may, in fact, get a flu, just not the ones covered in the vaccine. Each year the CDC picks the three that are the most likely to be this year's flu that spread the most.
And we'll talk about the different types of flu vaccines in a minute. Right now we're going to hear from Greg in Kansas City, Missouri. Greg, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, hi, thanks. Well, I appreciate what your guest has been saying. I actually did not catch his name, but...
Thad Wilson. Good.
Yeah, okay, great. Because I'm you know, 60, I've never had a flu shot, and I'm probably never going to get one. I mean, first of all, flu, it's a self-limiting disease, right? And it's not dangerous unless you're old or young. Then this what you just said about all these different strains of flu and the disease, and the vaccine only protects against a few of them. And then, you know, it seems like every year the CDC has some new flu scare, Asian flu or swine flu or bird flu, or, you know, there's all these flu pandemics that are supposed to happen, but they never happen. And it just seems like a huge overreaction. And then the final thing is, there seems to be a lot of evidence now that if you just increase your vitamin D levels up to certain points, that it's just as protective of colds and flu as a vaccine. So I'd love comments on that, and thanks.
Thank you very much, Greg. Greg talks about the culture of fear in the flu vaccine community and people's reactions toward it. He said he's never going to get one, and we'd like to hear from other people in Kansas City who have feelings one way or another about flu vaccines. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Billy emails us to say, I'm allergic to eggs. Are there any flu shots I can take? We'll address Billy's eggs and flu in a minute, but Greg first.
A response to Greg. Greg is correct that it is a self-limiting disease, and for the vast majority of people between the ages of about 12 and 65, yes, it's probably not going to kill you. However, the billions of dollars wasted each year on people who cannot go to work because they are sick with the flu, or who go to a physician or a nurse practitioner or somebody like that and get unneeded antibiotics because they think it might be an infection. The cost of the flu each year is tremendous.
That's certainly a fair consideration. Talk about the different types of flu vaccines and what some of the most common ones. You mentioned earlier that there are more than 1,000 flu strains.
Right.
So talk about some of the common vaccines.
Well, there's really just two types of vaccines. One is injectable, and the other one is a spray in the nose.
It's the strains that are different.
Right, the strains that are different. There are thousands of different strains, and what the CDC does and the scientists around the world do is we know that flu travels, and it generally travels around the world east to west. And so what they will do in July, or actually before that, in February, March of each year, they'll look at Australia, they'll look at China, they'll look at the other side of the world and see what's happening there and what appears to be traveling to the U.S. They pick those three strains, and that's what goes in the vaccine this next year.
Does it typically travel by plane? They say airports are the biggest petri dishes, and airplanes with the cabin pressure in the air are kind of incubators for that.
Right.
Is that how
that's
it travels?
That's part of it. Another part is that it does travel in the air. I mean, the pandemic that Greg talked about, the last time we had a pandemic was 1918, and it actually went around the world twice, and that was before we had lots of air travel. So it travels, airplane travel, so it travels in the air, it travels anywhere a person gets in a boat or a car, and so we can predict kind of how it goes around the world and able to predict what we think is going to be the most virulent kind that's going to hit the U.S. this next year.
Is this a way also to sort of take preventative measures against an epidemic while at the same time trying to manage and create maintenance on healthcare costs?
One of the reasons we haven't had the pandemic of 1918 repeated is because we have had the ability to look ahead and to vaccinate people ahead of time. The biggest concern, of course, is that we end up with a vaccine, with a flu that is not in the vaccine or that is extremely lethal. and we've been able to thwart those thus far.
Now, address Billy's allergic to eggs and is wondering how that – tell us how that relates to flu shots.
At this point, we still can only create a flu vaccine by millions of specially laid eggs by special chickens, and it's actually injected into the yolk, and it grows in the yolk, and then you break the egg open and put it in a petri dish. Then it's purified, et cetera, et cetera. But it does have an egg base to it. And so individuals that are extremely allergic to eggs shouldn't get the shot. They may still get the nasal one, the one that sprays in your nose.
Dr. Wilson, I was going to try the hardest I possibly could to say flew the coop, but I couldn't, and I apologize to that as well as my audience out here. But that's what you literally do these chickens, flew the coop.
That's exactly right.
Can you address, on a more serious note, both the urban legend and findings in some corners of the scientific community about the, I believe it's thimerosal, which 49% mercury and a known neurotoxin that's supposed to be in the flu vaccines. You could be inoculated from the flu, but also exposed to the dangers of neurological damage. Talk about that.
There actually was a big scare back when in the 1990s and early 2000s that this thimerosal, which is a methyl mercury, could potentially, ethyl mercury, which does have the potential to destroy neurological cells. What people would do is they would go get regular mercury, which is your methyl mercury, and it is very lethal, and they'd say this must be what's in the vaccines, and it's actually not. It's methyl. I get those two mixed up. And what I use as a good example is that most people, if they want to have a good night out on the town, they don't go drink rubbing alcohol because rubbing alcohol is very dangerous. And rubbing alcohol is ethyl alcohol, where the stuff that's in your wine and beer is methyl. So you can ingest things that have different they're similar yet different. And thimerosal is the different kind that's not as toxic to the nerves. And there's such a tiny little amount, and there's
– But it does have thimerosal.
Tiny, tiny little amount.
And
but there is some.
And what about the links of thimerosal to autism? You hear about that all the time inoculating little kids.
I can tell you that billions of people have been assessed throughout the world following vaccine administration, huge numbers of vaccines that are given to children. And there is no evidence. And in fact, the court of law in the United States reviewed all of the evidence and said there is no link between vaccines, the thimerosal that used to be in children's vaccines and isn't anymore, and autism or neurological disorders. The evidence just simply is not there, but the scare just won't go away.
You're listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest is Professor Thad Wilson, Senior Associate Dean at UMKC School of Nursing. He's talking about the influenza rush this season and the nature of flu vaccinations. And we've been hearing from you on your allergies to eggs and on whether or not you'd get a flu shot or not. Call in at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCURCST and hit us up with your thoughts on Facebook as well. We're going to go to Gary in Kansas City, Missouri.
I think you mean Gary.
Gary.
Thank you. I'm a physician. I'd like to address some of the issues raised by a previous caller regarding the flu vaccine and how it is a self-limited disease in many people. There's more to the story that wasn't cited. Professor Wilson cited the issue of economic costs of missing work from the flu. But also, even if a flu vaccine is not effective in a given individual, the fact that the flu vaccine is effective in most individuals helps confer a concept called herd immunity to the population. In other words, if there's a lot less people susceptible to the flu epidemic has much more difficulty propagating. And so I think that getting a flu shot actually should be viewed as a public service by any individual who chooses to be immunized, because they're one less potential host for the flu. And then the less potential hosts for the flu there are, the less likely influenza is to try to jump to a young person who might be susceptible or to an older person who might be susceptible. And I know as a 55-year-old, if I had a grandchild and I wasn't immunized against the flu because the flu wouldn't affect me so badly. And I transmitted the flu to my six-month-old grandchild, and they died of an influenza-related death. I know that I'd be feeling awful bad. To me, to fail to get immunized against the flu is equivalent to failing to wash your hands before you prepare food. You make yourself much less liable to transmit disease by washing your hands, and you make yourself much less liable to transmit the flu by having gotten an immunization and helping the group in Kansas City and all over the world acquire this concept called herd immunity. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Gary. What do you think of his
absolutely true
sterling endorsement of?
And I tell people all the time, I only think that you should get the flu vaccine if you are in contact with a child or an adult sometime in your day. So that's everybody. Everybody is going to have contact with children. If you go out into the shopping during this Christmas season, you will be around small children. You will be around people over the age of 65. You should not be the one who transmits that potentially fatal disease to someone else. So protect yourself means protecting others.
On the other side of that, is there any danger at all to creating an immunity to the flu where the natural flu that occurs out through the naturally selective process can build its own immunity against that? And so people are inoculated against the wrong strain. Is there a danger to that?
Statistically speaking, no. We have such great surveillance now throughout the world and such great communication that the chances of it mutating and coming is slim. It is still a potential. And that's why every year we, the CDC and the governments around the world, keep very close track on what is happening, because these viruses can mutate, and they can mutate quickly. But we have really such a great system set up that the chances are small.
In recent years, we've also seen outbreaks of whooping cough and measles. What's that about?
Whooping cough, or pertussis, as we've had a real great resurgence of that recently. It appears that the vaccine that we've been using doesn't last a lifetime like we thought it did. And the people who are getting the disease, the whooping cough, are primarily among adolescents and young adults. It's another one of those, it's a 3-, 4-, 5-day serious bad cough. I feel awful. I'm going to go to work. It is a lethal disease again for small children. And so it's important that we get everybody vaccinated again to create that herd immunity so that we're not giving the disease to children.
How does that come back? How does old diseases like whooping cough or measles,
well, it never goes away,
seemingly under control,
yeah,
come back?
We have never, the only thing we have completely eradicated from the earth, except in apparently a couple of vials in
polio.
Russia, is, but no, we still, there's still polio,
right,
around. It's smallpox.
Right, smallpox.
We have gotten rid of smallpox. Polio, we've got it narrowed down to some war-torn countries over in the Mideast. But that we have not seen polio here in the United States or the Western Hemisphere since the 1950s.
But there's also biological weapons,
right,
which have smallpox as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of vials over in Russia we worry about. But,
six on one hand.
The measles and the pertussis or whooping cough have never gone away. They've always been around. What we want to do is to protect as many people as we can against them.
Let's go to Thomas in KC Mo. Thomas, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine. I wanted to talk about Guillain-Barré.
Guillain-Barré?
Which I know is a rare disorder, but I came down with it about 10 years ago after getting a flu shot. And I had never had a flu shot before. Well, I had one the year before, and before that I never had one. And my intern said, well, they're free, your employer is paying for it, so you may as well get one. So I had one in 2001, which was fine. The next year was 2002, and about a week and a half, 2 weeks after that, I started developing these symptoms. And the long story short was that I got a mild case of Guillain-Barré. It lasted for about 3 months, and I suffered minor paralysis, minor numbness, and I've never had one since. I was strongly warned not to get another one, and I'm just wondering why, if I had this flu shot the first time with no reaction, why I would come down with this the second time.
Thank you very much, Thomas, for your contribution to the conversation. Can you take that, Dr. Thatt?
It's a very good question, and I don't have a really good answer to that. The body can create a response to any protein at any time. It's what we tell people about allergies. People say, you know, I'm 50 years old, I've never had allergies. Why do I all of a sudden create allergies, or why do I have allergies this year? The body can create a response to a protein at any time. Why it did or didn't related to your flu vaccines, I honestly don't know. When the type of research that we do is to look at a million people who received a vaccine, how many of them came down with a particular condition, in this case Guillain-Barré. Then we look at a million people who have not had a vaccine and how many of them came down with Guillain-Barré. And if the numbers are exactly the same, then we really can't say, well, the vaccine caused it. There certainly is a timetable relationship here. But any individual body may respond to something at any time in any given way, and that's just the nature of the human body.
Dr. Thad Wilson, what is the profile of people delaying or refusing vaccination for themselves or their children? Why do people of this nature seem to say, I don't want to get it? What's the most common?
You know, it's interesting. A fairly extensive study was done about 10 years ago looking at who the non-vaccinators were, because those of us in the field were working very hard to ensure that the poor who didn't have access to health care, that they were getting vaccinated. We did not want money to be a barrier to them. And what we found, or not we, but the people who did the study found that the majority of the people choosing to not vaccinate at all were college-educated, middle class, and white. And the study indicated that these were individuals who spent a lot of time studying and evaluating information off of the Internet and coming to a conclusion that vaccines were dangerous, because every vaccine does have some side effect, and that their children were this is primarily among children, but their children were safe because these diseases don't continue to occur. But if we go back to what Gary was saying, is that, you know, maybe your child is safe because everybody around you is vaccinated. Well, what if everybody stops vaccinating? We'll start to see the huge outbreaks again of these diseases.
You talked about the healthcare access component. Gabrielle emails us in at centralstandard@kcur.org to say, my insurance doesn't cover the flu shot. While we are middle class by income, by the time we pay our bills, we are poor. Where can we get a flu shot for our family without the huge cost? Even $25 means $100 for a family such as ours.
That is a really good question, and one which I know the Kansas City community is continuing to work on. The health departments each year attempt to get what are called block grants. It's money that comes through to be able to vaccinate for free. If they get the block grants, then they can pay not only for the vaccine, but for the people who are administering it. Most of the time, what you're paying for, the $10 or $25, is to pay the person who's administering it their salary. And I don't know the answer right now for Kansas City, but if you check online with the Mid-America Immunization Coalition, you can Google that. They have information there.
Mike in Overland Park, we'd like to hear from you. Thank you for calling Central Standard. Hello, Mike. We don't have Mike yet.
Oh, hello?
Hello?
Yes, I'm
there.
Sorry.
You go, Mike.
I have a question. I have my 19-year-old daughter has had a problem with sensitivity to like amoxicillin and other injections she's had in the past. And specifically, about 4 years ago, she had a reaction to thimerosal or something in the flu shot. I'm not exactly sure what it was. But so is there a way to test to see if a person has some kind of a sensitivity, or is it better, you know, is the same kind of a sensitivity exist with the inhaled type of inoculation for the flu?
Good question, Mike. Go ahead.
Yeah, very good question. If an individual has had previous severe reactions to injections, then we generally recommend that you not go ahead with another injection. You definitely should talk with your primary care provider, whoever that may be, about the spray in the nose, just to make sure that, because you're not talking about just an injection of the flu vaccine, but she has other allergies to other things such as amoxicillin. And that's really a very complex question you should talk over with your primary care provider to make sure that you're getting the correct advice based on all the information, particularly since if your child has other chronic diseases such as asthma, we certainly want to make sure they don't get the flu, because they are at higher risk for some bad events to happen. So I would refer you back to your primary care provider.
Briefly, Dr. Wilson, how do healthcare practitioners and public health officials strike a balance between preventative treatment and the culture of fear around a widespread outbreak or some type of conspiracy about injections?
Another good question. The Mid-America Immunization Coalition, I'm going to mention them again. They are the area. It's a bi-state endeavor to try to educate healthcare providers as well as the public about vaccines and what needs to be done to assure that we're keeping everybody as safe as possible.
We'll be sure to get that website up on kcur.org, and you can go there after this broadcast. Our guest is Professor Thad Wilson, Senior Associate Dean at the UMKC School of Nursing. We've been talking about the influenza rush this season and the nature of vaccinations. Thank you for coming, Dr. Wilson.
Thank you for letting me share.
And speaking of kcur.org, you can hear this show as well as other programs, broadcast, and special features once again at kcur.org. Tune in tomorrow as we meet an MIT graduate who's decided that he's like to go off the grid and chronicles his latest tale in a book called Better Off. Our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton. Up to Date is next with applied mathematician Sam Abersman on chance, Hanukkah, and virtual sports. That plus a look at domestic violence in KC. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.